Anna brought coffee and biscuits and sat in an armchair. She was wearing another loose jumper, indigo this time, over tan jeans. Irresistible. "Did you come here yesterday and get my note?"
"Yes."
"Good. I was worried that you hadn't. I suppose I thought you'd write something on the bottom of it."
"I didn't know whether I'd be able to come back today. I'm sorry to take you by surprise."
"Did you really have a meeting in Dorset?"
"Yes. It happened several weeks ago."
Anna absorbed this information. I paused.
There's something else I haven't told you."
I weighed which card to lay on the table.
"I don't really have a job anymore."
I gave her a brief resume of the previous months. She burst out laughing.
"I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. It's mean. It was the image of you standing outside your office and saying good morning and good night to everyone. I think it's wonderful." "None of it leads anywhere," I said. "Can't go on like this forever."
"When I met you," said Anna, "I thought how lucky you must be, with a good job and plenty of money, and all of London at your fingertips. It isn't just self-deception that's the problem. We deceive ourselves about other people, too. I think I mostly learn about reality from works of fiction."
"Do you read a lot?"
"Constantly. There's not much else to do in the evenings here, as you can see."
"Don't you read modern novels?"
"Not really. I don't read very much."
I had stopped reading difficult books. Eventually, even Middlebrow became too much like hard work. Other cultural interests had gone the same way. Perhaps the greatest loss was in conversation. Once it had been fearless. I would plunge without hesitation into areas that the wise would consider dangerous, and found them thrilling. I was not afraid to reveal any part of myself, and because of that, attracted similar revelations from others.
Now I went to those places no longer. Judy had never been to them. In fact, I had never had a single conversation with her that fully explored such terrain. None of our new friends seemed to have any emotional curiosity or depth. Life dumbed down. And the better part of what life was about, or had been about, took its leave and was absent. That was why Anna mattered. She mattered because she had once encapsulated everything that had seemed important, and, so far as I could tell, she still did. She mattered because I had once been in love with her, and, so far as I could tell, I still was. She mattered because she seemed, at this moment, to be the only person I knew who provided any tangible proof of the person I had once been.
"Why did you leave London?"
I asked.
"Well, the fact is that I was messed up, not to put too fine a point upon it. Something happened to me in 1967. It doesn't matter what it was. It wasn't very nice. It sounds pathetic to say that it changed everything, but it did."
This was another conclusion that I had reached at the time. There had seemed no explanation for how Anna had behaved towards me, other than the intervention of a dramatic event in her life. I felt relieved when she told me that. It lessened my sense of rejection.
"Why should it sound pathetic?" I asked.
"Because I hate the blame culture, where everything that happens to you is someone else's fault. You end up putting some event from the past in charge, and you can't get your life back again. At the time, I was about to go to university. I felt really happy about life. A curtain came down. I felt dead. I drank too much, screwed around too much, did drugs. I hated every minute of university. I had no idea what I wanted to do afterwards, so I went into advertising. It wasn't a great job, but it was supposedly a start. I did it for about 4 years and then I quit. That was a completely stupid thing to do. Without it, I was sunk. Anyway, that was how it started. It got a lot worse from there.
Perhaps it had nothing to do with what happened in 67. Perhaps that's my excuse. What's yours?
I don't know, I said. I'm not sure I've got an excuse. Not for my working life, anyway. I've never been able to work out how I ended up in the city. I was thinking about all this last night. Something else happened at the same time. That April, my brother died. 11th of April, 1970. It must have been a week or two later that I applied for a job in the city. Perhaps that had something to do with it. Perhaps I needed a purpose, something quite different in which to immerse myself.
How did he die?
In a car. We never knew exactly what happened. It was late at night. He probably fell asleep at the wheel. More honeyed words, more elisions of the truth, more repetitions of a party line, hoping to win posterity's favourable verdict. We never knew the trains were bound for Auschwitz. We never knew black people got treated that way in Mississippi. We never knew exactly how Alan died. I knew, all right. Anna stood up. Shall I make some lunch? We sat at the table, and Anna opened a bottle of wine. The conversation veered from light to dark, from dark to light, as it had all morning. When the meal was over, Anna said, I normally go and lie on my bed for half an hour after lunch. Do you want to join me? I admired the delicacy of the question. It was not a direct invitation to make love, but it carried the implication that if I chose to place that interpretation upon it, Anna would not demur. I did choose to place that interpretation. I also chose to delay it. So we lay on Anna's bed, my arm around her, fingers ruffling her hair, talking. It felt like lying in the long grass again, on another blackdown. Have you ever been married? I asked. No, never. I wondered what had made her tell that lie. Children?
No, said Anna. Although I had an abortion once. It was part of what happened in 67. Do you have kids?
Yes, two.
That's two more than me. I would call that an achievement. Does your wife love you?
Yes, I said. Amazingly, I think she does.
Another achievement, said Anna.
I expect that if we were to look carefully, we would find quite a few achievements.
They don't amount to very much.
Your words, not mine.
What I mean is that we thought we would achieve big things. They were meant to be grand projects. How could it dissolve to so little?
Well, it has, said Anna. And in its littleness, it is the little things that matter.
Little things like tenderness, like touch, like the brushing of hair on skin. Little things like white clouds racing across a blue sky. Little things like birdsong and the smell of mown hay. We made love in phases that afternoon. At first, languidly, then desperately, then sensuously. She smelt of fresh air, not of expensive perfumes. She was eager as I was, but we took our time. I had waited so long for this moment and wanted to savour it. I felt that Anna must have waited quite a long time as well.
How long are you staying? She asked later.
I should be going soon.
Will I see you again?
Do you want to?
I don't know, said Anna. The answer's yes, really. In fact, hugely, but I'm not sure it would be wise.
Why shouldn't it be wise?
Matthew, if I appear a little detached, it's because I've learnt to be this way.
I didn't just get my fingers burnt. All of me was burnt. It's not that I don't want someone in my life, but I'm scared of removing the bandages and getting burnt all over again. I'm not sure I could bear it.
I understand, I said. I'm sure you want to understand, Matthew, but it doesn't mean that you can. Thank you for being honest and telling me about your job. But there's plenty else about you that I don't know. Your marriage and your family, for a start. I haven't asked because it's none of my business. But it does have a bearing on things, doesn't it? I don't know what's on offer. Do you?
Not entirely, no.
I think I would like to know before we see each other again.
Shall I be in touch when I can answer the question?
Yes, said Anna. Please do.
What I've decided to do is simple. I shall pull off the A303 in a few minutes and call home. If Judy is there, and if she answers, I will say that I'll be home at about 8. If she isn't, or if she doesn't answer, I'll turn the car around, go back to Anna, and tell her that I'm back. To stay. The answering machine will cut in after 6 rings. The phone rings 5 times. Hello? Judy, you're there. Yes, Matthew, I'm here. Where are you?
Somewhere near Andover, I think.
When will you be back? I know there isn't meant to be a plan, but this isn't the plan.
I'm not coming back.
There is a long pause.
It's not working, Judy, is it? It's time to stop pretending. Coming from you, Matthew, that's a bit rich.
Do you think I don't know what's been going on since June?
What do you mean?
Rupert rang me the morning he let you go. I've known all along. You were still pretending to go into work every day. I thought it would take some of the pressure off if you still had an office to call your own. Do you know what this is, Judy? It's a conspiracy, that's what it is.
Yes, says Judy.
It's been a conspiracy to save you from yourself. We're all worried about you. I went to see Dr. Little, and she kindly gave me the name of someone who might be able to help. Of course, he couldn't say very much without seeing you. He did say it sounded as if you'd had some sort of a breakdown. You need help, darling, so why don't you come home and we'll see about getting it? I put the phone down.